Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing. Today, I'm really excited to be interviewing Stephen Nelson. He is the
Planning Director
at Hurricane City. And today, we're going to talk yet again about short-term rentals and their impact on attainable housing. So, Stephen, before we get started, can you tell me a little bit about your history and your work at Hurricane City, kind of like what you do, how long you've been here, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So I've been with Hurricane City for almost 3 years. It's I started in April of 2020. Mm-hmm. So my job, my position here is I'm planning director. So what that means is I oversee the short-term and long-term planning that takes land use planning that takes place in the city, and part of my department also is coordination between other departments. And so what we do is we look at what we want the city to become through planning processes that include different land uses. What are the goals? What type of character and heritage do we want to honor? What do we want to achieve with our land use? And then we create laws and more detailed plans on how to achieve that. And so, you know, big chunk of my job is reviewing the day-to-day, like, land use applications, so subdivisions, building permits, zone changes, those type of things. But then we also work on, like, master planning projects. So our general plan, we're doing a downtown master plan right now, and we're looking at doing other planning projects in the near future to help guide the city. We're a fast-growing city. We have a lot of undeveloped area. And so there's a lot to do.
Cool. Well, it seems like I keep hearing about Hurricane and their short-term rental policy. It's been kind of something that's, I've been hearing about it for a while, and it's been a little bit evolving. So can you talk on kind of what's going on right now with that policy? Like what are the conversations that are happening in Hurricane right now about it?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, the city council kind of established a short-term rental policy within the city. And we'll go through kind of the different phases and aspects of what those impacts are. Mm-hmm. But some of that has been under reconsideration in the last few months because of just the sheer amount of pressure that we've seen with short-term rentals. I mean, people are able to, you know, if you own property, you're able to make more money off of short-term rental than a long-term rental. And so we have a lot of investors and a lot of property owners that want to get the most out of their property. And so back several years ago, we created some base policies, and they haven't changed a whole lot. But so if you want to do a short-term rental in Hurricane, there's about 3 or 4 ways that you can do it. So the first one is we have our recreation resort zoning. And so these are developments that every unit within it has to or can be a short-term rental. And so people can live there long-term or people can live there short-term. There are certain rules and regulations about how they're developed. They require certain amenities like on-site management, a clubhouse, and different pools or other amenities that are required. We also have parking requirements that are with these developments to ensure there's adequate parking. And that's actually something we just went through and did some fine-tuning on that just about a year ago to clarify with some of the requirements. The next option that property owners have for short-term rentals is we have our full home vacation rental policy, which essentially allows for single-family zoning. A home within a single-family zone could be rented out on a short-term basis, but we have a cap on the number of licenses that we issue. And so we allow for three homes out of every 1,000 residents. And so right now in Hurricane, that's about 68 homes that are allowed to have these short-term rental licenses and single-family zoning.
And is that pretty full? I mean, is there like a waiting list a mile long for,
for doing that? Last I checked, there was about 70 to 80 people on the waiting list.
Wow.
And based on our population growth and how our normal turnover, we anticipate that if you get on the list now, it would be somewhere between 6 to 8 years before your property would come up. A couple of other stipulations with that is that we don't allow those within the front yards within 300 feet of each other. So that way there is some spacing in those programs. And then the last one that's available to most people are we allow for accessory dwelling units. So that would be like your guest house, your casita, basement apartments, those type of things. we allow those to be rented out on a short-term basis as long as the primary dwelling is owner-occupied. And so mm-hmm. if you live on the property and you build a casita or some sort of ADU on your property, you can rent those out on a short-term basis.
Okay. And are there laws governing the ADUs? Like, you can't have, like, or do they have to be attached to the home? Or is that more complicated than you want to answer in short?
In many cities, there are certain rules. Mm-hmm. But in Hurricane, actually, our ADU policy is we allow a lot of options. And mm-hmm. so you can be attached, you can be detached. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, it can be a basement, it can be over a garage, it can be on the side, it can be in the back. We don't allow it to be built in the front yard, okay. which for most homes, that's not an issue. But there are some larger lots that occasionally want to come in with a guest house in front of the main home, which we mm-hmm. don't allow.
Okay.
So it's pretty, you do have to, if you want to do that, you do have to get your unit inspected every year by the fire department. And we've recently actually clarified within our code what an accessory dwelling unit is mm-hmm. because we wanted to ensure that we've had a lot of, well, some of the issues that we've had is our previous code wasn't super clear with how that was governed. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a lot of people build out like at one building that they're renting out four or five rooms in, and it is made
to separate parties. So that comes into, like, starts to be multifamily-ish.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so that's been an issue that we've ran into.
Okay. So speaking of ADUs, like in my research, I know they're one of the best practices for attainable housing. So what do you think, if any, is the intersection between attainable housing and short-term rentals?
Yeah, this has been a question that we've been debating quite a bit. And there's several different layers of that goes to this conversation. In a lot of studies across the country, they show that when you have increased short-term rentals in the in an area, that rents tend to go up. Mm-hmm. Because partly they're taking stuff away from the normal housing market. People who choose to do long-term rentals are choosing to do short-term because it's more profitable. Mm-hmm. And so that can eat up into that. One of the issues that we've had, or one of the policy debates that we've had here at the city, is how do we govern our short-term rentals for ADUs?
Mm-hmm.
Our code currently allows anybody to do it, but during our general plan process and our moderate income housing plan process, there's been different ideas that have came up about potentially putting a cap on that.
Mm-hmm.
Thus far, the city council has not wanted to do that because they have felt that allowing property owners with ADUs to rent them out short term is a direct benefit to residents of Hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you own a home and you rent it out on a short term basis, you have that extra income that supports your family, supports your own housing, and makes your own housing more affordable.
Yeah.
So as of today, the council has not wanted to go down that and put a limit on those numbers. We do have a few ADUs that are being rented out on a long term basis, but most of those are to people who the property owner already knows or is related to. So, you mm-hmm. know, it's like parents or children or, you know, cousins or good friends that they're renting it out to.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people some people have chosen to do long-term because they don't want to go through the hassle of managing a short-term rental on their property.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have a friend who was looking into taking like a house that I think had an upstairs and a basement and renting it long-term to different people. And she said the process was really difficult with the city, and I don't know what her experience was, but I was wondering if the city's considered making it easier for situations like that. It like with the caveat that your fee is lower, or you get fast tracked through the process if you're doing it for long term rentals versus the short term. Do they ever talk about that or think about that?
Yeah. So right now in Hurricane, if you have one single long term resident or rental, you don't have to get a business license.
Oh, okay.
And so if it's just one unit, then you can move forward. But the second you want, or when you want to start renting out multiple units, mm-hmm. at that point, you have to get a license to do that.
Okay.
We have looked at our moderate income housing plan that we just recently adopted, recommends that we do a good landlord program,
mm-hmm.
which essentially would require, or well, essentially we would provide some sort of discount on business licensing if they complete some sort of training on like mm-hmm. Fair Housing Act and those type of items. And so it would give them a little bit of discount in exchange for them going through some courses to learn some of the legal requirements of being a landlord.
Cool. So we've touched a little bit on what's going on with short-term rental policy in Hurricane. Is there anything else you want to say about, like, is anything changing right now, or is that summary pretty well where we're at and nothing's going to change?
Yeah, so there is a couple updates. Okay. They're a little bit nuanced, but they will have some impact. So we recently rewrote a big section of our short-term rental code, and all in all, most of our policies remain the same. What we did was go through and we clarified a lot of things, provide better definitions, because we were finding that the layperson was having a hard time following the code. And so we wanted to make it simpler to understand.
Okay.
And then we also addressed short-term rentals within commercial zoning. There was a lot of debate about when having a short-term rental unit or complex turned into a hotel, because there's different standards that you have to meet to be a hotel or motel. And so we went through and redefined some of those just recently, just within the last couple months. And that clarification, I think, will be helpful, especially for those who might develop a commercial property or looking at adding on short-term rentals onto an existing commercial property.
So what do you think are the best practices in terms of short-term rental policy as far as, like, you know, the house style ones instead of hotels?
Yeah, so so generally speaking, there's a lot that you have to weigh. So short-term rentals do play a large part in the economy. I mean, within Washington County, the big percentage of the local economy is based on tourism.
Tourism, yeah.
Because we get a lot of people coming through for the weather, for Zions National Park, we have Iron Man, we have Sand Mountain, we have the two state parks in Hurricane, and a lot of different sporting events. And so that's a lot of money that flows into Hurricane City and into the county generally. We also collect a lot of tax revenue off of these properties as well. And so Airbnb collects taxes on behalf of the city, and that's distributed or VRBO or whatever other site they may be using. And those can be significant numbers that we receive in revenue. Then there's also property taxes on these tend to be higher. The buildings tend to be worth a little bit more because of their zoning status. But they're also taxed within Utah. If you're a for your primary residence, only gets taxed at 55% of its value. But if it's a commercial use or if it's a secondary home, then it's taxed at 100% of its value. So there is definitely some revenue and some benefit, and not to mention the benefit that people who live here receive from the economic impacts of that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge is finding the right balance on how to address the impacts that short-term rentals can have on local neighborhoods. Because we get complaints frequently about people having parties late at night or RVs and trailers parked up and down the street for these short-term rentals, especially when they're located within a single-family neighborhood. And so some of the things that we have done is limiting the ones within single-family to a certain number, and then requiring that spacing can help mitigate some of that impact. We have some neighborhoods that seem to be more desirable for short-term rentals. And we get calls weekly about buying property to make them, and buying single-family homes and turning them into short-term rentals. And so some of that spacing requirements have been good. And really, when in our resort zoning, where all the units are short-term rentals, and also in our ADU policy, so our accessory dwelling units, we don't get very many complaints about those, partly because there's management on site or the property owner is there. And with some of these, like the ADUs, they tend to be smaller in nature. So you're not getting, you know, 20 people that are staying in.
Trying to share one.
Yeah, in a guest house.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so it tends to be less impact. And some of the things, like I've gone and talked to some neighboring cities about this type of policy. And one of the other benefits that, like, the ADU one has is just the direct benefit to residents of the city.
Local residents. Yeah, that makes sense. So if somebody were interested in getting a residential hosting permit, what's the process to get one? And, like, does the city have a website, or how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so you just come into City Hall. Right now you just have to come in and file a permit. You just request to be put on the waiting list. There's no charge for that. So that's for single family homes, and they get put on the waiting list, and we'll just keep you there until your time is up. And then when the time comes, we send you a notification, and you have about 45 days to respond to that notification to come in and get your license for it. If you miss that deadline or you miss that window, then you get kicked off the list.
Okay.
And it goes to the next person.
And what about, like, for an ADU one? Is that a different process or is it the same?
Like, you're just required to get a business license to have a short-term rental.
Oh, okay.
And so it's really simple. You just come in and you do the application. We review it. You do have to have a fire review on the property. And then depending on you do also have to turn in a layout of your home and show kind of a brief site plan of what your ADU is, how it's going to be managed, and where parking's going to be. And so that way we can just confirm that it complies with our code. I was going to say, some of the bigger issues that we've had is people have tried to expand the ADU into the primary home and try to do many rooms and those type of things. So we just have to check and make sure that that's all in compliance.
Okay, cool. Like, between zoning laws and short-term rentals, so right now, tell me about it. Like, the city just has certain zones and that's it as far as, like, fully operational, like, everything's a...
Yeah, so within our code, we have our residential hosting zoning, and the residential hosting allows for every single unit within them to be a resort. We have about 14 areas in the city that have that zoning classification right now. Sometimes those
I didn't realize there were so many.
Yeah.
I only think of the one up on the hill kind of by IHC. Where are some of the other areas?
So Sand Hollow Resort has some in it.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, and so that's out by Sand Hollow. Uh-huh. Then we also have Copper Rock has some designation. We just approved another one that's kind of between Copper Rock and Sand Hollow Reservoir. It's kind of smack between part of the Cordero development.
Okay. Is that developed yet, or is that like in planning stage right now? It's just
in planning.
Now?
So most of these are in planning. We have about, for resort units, we have about just over 5,000 units that have been proposed and approved in some format.
Wow.
But right now there is only about 305 resort of those. About 305 are actually
that licensed are existing and existing functioning.
And functioning.
Wow.
And so there are a few others. Like, there's a new development out by I-15 by the interchange. They're building those condo units out there, and those are all short-term rentals as well.
Okay.
And so some of these were approved years ago and just haven't moved anywhere and now are starting to have some momentum. And some of them have just been approved within the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've kind of touched on most of the questions that I have. Do you have any other things you want to say or thoughts on short-term rentals? And if you don't, I want to hear your thoughts on attainable housing and, like, what's going on with the current attainable housing plan in Hurricane.
Yeah, I have lots of thoughts on all those.
Yeah. Okay.
So short-term rentals, I don't know if I have much more to consider. It is something that, as you know, as a city looking to govern and looking to ensure, it's all comes down to balance. You want to balance the needs of the individual property owner with the needs of the community and the rights of the community. And so Hurricane has tried to walk that balance and in a more favorable way than what a lot of other cities in our same situation has done. And for the most part, we've had some success with it. Short-term rentals are one of the more difficult things to enforce. And the city has, over the last couple of years, has put a lot of money into enforcement. And we're seeing a lot of success with that in the last year. We've had to rewrite our code and change our system.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I remember when I first heard, we're going to enforce it now, and we're like, that there was an effort. What did that look like at the beginning?
Yeah, so how it used to be under our code is it was a criminal charge. And by state law, we can't use the listing as evidence of the violation. And so if they list the property on
that sounds like a law that Airbnb wrote, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't... It is definitely a difficult thing to navigate because we can use that as an indication of them using a short-term rental, but if we actually were to charge somebody with it, we can't use that as evidence.
I feel like I should say, not an Airbnb. It sounds like something that a corporation who ran such sites wrote that one. Not them in particular, any corporation that does that. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. So the Utah League of Cities and Towns, which is an organization of the cities within the state have actually petitioned the state legislature to change that law to allow better enforcement.
Okay.
And there's a bill currently at the state. It wasn't passed as of yesterday that mm-hmm. made some changes to that. And so we're just kind of waiting to see what ends up coming out of this legislative session.
Okay.
Or if anything will come out of this legislative change. But mm-hmm. so what we've had to do is we've had to find other ways to gather evidence. Mm-hmm. And so one of those ways is, you know, we document case, like, complaints.
Mm-hmm.
We also document, like, we've had witnesses provide statements of mm-hmm. people coming in and out that were short-term rentals. The other thing is we've hired a couple different companies over the last couple of years to look at properties, and they're able to track reviews on the site compared to, like, when the stays happened. Mm-hmm. And so we can't use the listing as evidence, but we can use the review itself. So if you stay somewhere and then you leave a review on the website that's posted on about it, we can use that as evidence somebody's been staying there as a short-term rental.
That's interesting, because I stayed in one in California one time when we were going to Disneyland, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is a non-conforming, because everything else around it looked like condos. And I just thought, it made me feel guilty, because I don't like to be a non-conform. I like to follow the law. But I could never find our, like, I wrote a review because there were some issues with it, and it never could show. And I was like, is this owner, like, hiding their reviews and just relisting it all the time? I don't know what was going on with that. But
yeah, and that
interesting.
That might be the case. So the other thing mm-hmm. that we did is we changed it from a criminal citation or infraction to a civil penalty mm-hmm. or administrative fine. And so there's a lower bar of evidence mm-hmm. that we have to clear with that. And it's something that, instead of getting police involved or the justice court, the city mm-hmm. appointed a code enforcement officer who can just issue a citation for a violation.
Oh, that's nice.
So it has allowed, when we started with the new system about a year ago, we had a couple hundred of illegal violations that we knew of.
Mm-hmm.
And we're down to about 20 right now.
Oh, cool.
And so it's been pretty successful. A big chunk of those have been people who've been operating without licenses, who should have had one, like in a resort zone. That was mm-hmm. a chunk of them.
Okay.
But a lot of them were those who were operating illegally. And so we've collected fines. We've had, we've won in justice court over some of the mm-hmm. cases. We've had an appeal that we won with the new system. And so it's been really successful, and something that we're going to continue to use over the next several years to really try to keep it reined in.
Cool. I've been doing some homework about these, because I'm a volunteer alternate for the Planning Commission in Tocqueville. And it said one of the best practices is to have, like, a good system going in the city, because if you have enforcement, you have clear policy, then it can create more of a virtuous cycle where you're able to cooperate with all the people who are running these. And then it's not like, you know, people just complaining and everything being out of control. So sounds like Hurricane's doing well.
Yeah, I feel like we made a lot of steps over the last couple of years to help mm-hmm. manage the situation and clarify the code and mm-hmm. enhance some of our standards. And I feel like that has added to better development and better communities generally.
Cool. Love it. So what's going on with attainable housing in Hurricane? How are things going with your plan? And
yeah, that's a great question. So we're required by state law to adopt a moderate income housing plan, and we adopted a fairly aggressive one last September.
Mm-hmm.
By state law, we're only required to have about 3 policy objectives. We adopted 7 state recommended policies and then added 3 additional onto that to help address some of our affordable housing.
Wow, that sounds nice and thorough.
Yeah. And so we definitely do have an issue with affordable housing. I mean, mm-hmm. under the last census that came out, if you look at our vacancy rate between our number of homes that were vacant in 2010, 2015, and 2020, the number of vacancies or just a normal home remain the same despite our growth. Because normally, mm-hmm. Normally you'd anticipate seeing those go up with the population or number of homes, but it was just completely flat.
Mm-hmm.
What we did see go up was our short-term rent, our temporary vacancy homes. Those would be like seasonal homes or short-term rentals. Those did go up over the last 10 years. So there's obviously a housing shortage. And so we've done several steps in the last couple months, actually. So mm-hmm. one of them was we approved a multifamily, mixed single family and commercial development. So it was a mixed use development. And we required that 10% of those would be deed restricted and remain affordable.
Okay.
And so not only are they bringing in a variety of housing options and some additional housing supply into the market and commercial, and they're located next to Walmart, where mm-hmm. there's already going to be some supporting commercial for that type of development. Cool. But they're also going to have deed-restricted property, so 10% of the development will be required to remain affordable for the next 25 years.
And when you say affordable, is that like the 10% to 100% of the median income? Yeah. Or like, do you know the mm-hmm. precise?
Yeah, so our code, so when we look at affordability, mm-hmm. So a home is considered affordable when you're not spending more than 30% of your income mm-hmm. on housing. So that includes mm-hmm. taxes, utilities, and whatever your housing payment is, whether that's mortgage or rent.
Mm-hmm.
So how we normally require affordable units is we set it at a certain percentage of the area medium income. So we look at all mm-hmm. the incomes in the area and whatever the medium is that of that, and then look at 80% is normally the highest level of affordability, and then you have 50% and 30%, which is the lowest, those who are making only 30% of area median income.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these units, under our code, would only require them to meet 80% levels.
Okay.
And so this wouldn't meet the very lowest income needs, but it would meet those who would otherwise be priced out.
Which is many residents. Yeah. So that's great. Cool. Any other affordable housing stuff?
A couple of the other things. We're actually looking at implementing a broader, we call it an inclusionary zoning policy mm-hmm. across the city. So essentially what we did in front of by Walmart, we want to implement a policy that would do that across the whole city or give options to property owners to use that. Because right now, only one of our zoning allows for that type of deed restriction type of use.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're wanting to create a policy that will allow that and provide incentives across the city. Under Utah law, you can't force somebody to provide affordable housing. You can't make that a condition of their approval. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is provide incentives. So if you offer some density bonuses or waiving of certain fees or something like that, then the property owner chooses to use that, then you can definitely use it. But so that's what we're looking at. We're looking at providing a group of incentives and language within our code so that property owners, that would be an option for several zones.
Cool. Well, that sounds really good. Do you have any other thoughts on either short-term rentals or attainable housing that you think people should hear about what's going on in Hurricane?
Let's see. Yeah. I mean,
have we missed anything, I guess, is what I'm asking.
No, I think we've covered a lot of things. Well, most of these mm-hmm. issues are obviously a work in process. Mm-hmm. When it comes to affordable housing, the market plays a huge impact. And so oftentimes we're looking at policies and decisions. You know, we try to keep track on the market and what's happening, and so that we know how to adjust in order to help the issue. And you know, we've tried to adopt some broader policies about trying to increase the variety of housing options within the city to try to address some of those, and then responding to individual zone changes or applications. But for short-term rentals, it's kind of the same thing. We're just trying to stay above what is currently allowed under state law and what we can do, and then respond appropriately.
Cool. It sounds good. I suspect that cities are a lot like the building industry where, you know, in some product markets, it's super easy to be really responsive to supply and demand, but housing I've heard described as a sticky product because they're so big, they're so expensive to build. It takes a year to build them. So if there's a market trend that's happening right now, we don't see the response to that in a while, and I bet the cities are a lot like that. But it sounds like you guys are doing awesome and trying to keep your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the city.
Yeah, it is challenging because, you know, we have a housing shortage, but it'll take years mm-hmm. before we get housing. And one study found that if you had a housing shortage and cities were more proactive in getting a higher variety of housing types, that the effects weren't truly felt for at least 5 years.
Wow.
And so, you know, we can do stuff that responds to the market, but there's obviously going to be a lag because, you know, if we need more housing, you have to do a subdivision, and mm-hmm. which requires planning it out, providing plans that meet engineering standards, building it, and then constructing the homes.
Plus purchasing the property.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's all that stuff even before that. So I could see that lag making a lot of sense. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Stephen. I think that's all I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
More than happy. You.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.